Hey everybody, Stephen here from The Truth About Dyslexia. In today's episode, I have an awesome interview with Simone, and she is, it's your last name Allen? Is it Simone Allen? Is it?
Yeah, so Simone Allen is, and my last name's Keller.
Yeah, Keller. Simone Allen Keller. That's a good one. That's a nice one. As I say, what I always say on the podcast is every, you know, all my guests have real intense names that are slightly different. And like, you know, it just keeps me on my toes. So we have Simone here from Genius U. She's neurodiverse. She's been in the branding world, helping people get seen. And she's been working on a project called Genius U to help not just neurodiverse people, but anyone in general to really cut through the problems and self-beliefs that are holding them back. So we're gonna go through our normal zone of finding out a little bit about your story, Simone, and then we'll dive into what you're doing now and how you're helping people. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Awesome. So tell me a bit about your journey. You know, you can start back as far as you like. Everyone loves a good story on this podcast.
Well, I think relating back to this, I think the one of the biggest drivers, I've always been fascinated by brilliance. Captivated. There's this lovely story about when I was a little girl running onto a friend's house saying, "I just saw the most brilliant thing," and she's like, "You say that 7 times a day." So brilliance has always been something that I've seeked, and so developing getting into branding was very natural, because that's what branding's all about. It's about distilling what you're brilliant at and making sure you lead with it. But on the other side, I also come from a family of strategists and deep thinkers and neurodiversity. And, you know, starting life on not understanding that about myself was hard. I remember somebody said to me just recently, you're lucky that you have, oh, I have ADHD, and it's really fortunate you've found out about it, and it wasn't that bad, was it? And I'm like, well, actually, there were really hard bits about it. And now looking back, I can see that my neurodiversity and not understanding that created a lot of challenge for me. And so it has, one of the things that did drive me is that I didn't want my own children experiencing life in the same way that I could see I had, and also in the kind of life that I was creating for myself, but also that I could see other people that, you know, had differences were bringing about harder situations than needed to be.
Yeah, and I think, you know, because you were diagnosed with ADHD only recently, is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the typical daughter gets diagnosed and then a light bulb moment. So, you know, I didn't have any of the kind of common traits that you would think about, the hyperactive. Well, I was probably very hyperactive, but, you know, I was good at school. I was very fascinated by it. And I was, you know, and because I was so fascinated by learning, focus issues didn't show up until probably my early 20s. So I was a student that every teacher wanted, because I remember somebody said to me years ago, they bumped into me and said, "Oh, you're Simone from intermediate school. Oh, we were so scared of you because you're so little, but you thought like an adult."
Yes.
Yeah, and so even at 11, I had really big thoughts about things.
That's a great point, though, just to completely butt in, as we do in this podcast, yeah. We'll cover of you, vice versa. But, you know, that is a really important thing for people to think about with neurodiversity. And, you know, ADHD, autism, dyslexia, they're all such close friends. It's kind of luck of the draw what you get diagnosed with, right? And, you know, we see this with the little one around us. Is she thinking at 6 and a half, she thinks like she's bloody 18. Like the thought process that her brain is chugging through, it's like freaking scary, right?
One of the things that I teach people now is that we start forming our world when we start cognitively thinking, which is between 18 months and 3 years old. So our mind is very driven by our interpretation of emotions. And so it begins very, very, very young. But I think I loved the process of thinking. I remember being very young and seeing someone chewing chewing gum and asking them, an adult, and asking them, are you chewing chewing gum? And they were, and they lied. And I remember thinking, why are you lying? Like, and it wasn't like I was upset that they were lying. I was more fascinated by it. So by age 11, I remember creating a society that people could live in, that they actually could live in harmony, and, you know, all these ideas about diversity and the importance of it. I won a national speech competition for about world peace at 12. and you know, my argument was that peace isn't only possible, it's inevitable, you know. So I was definitely... You can see back the characteristics were all there, but
so many of us are great orators, right? Like, that's our, you know, many dyslexics, people with ADHD, neurodiversity, we're great on our feet when we're talking from our souls or what we want to talk about. We're terrible is reading, none of us are great at reading auto cues. That's a very hard challenge.
Well, I'm glad you told me that, because, you know, you can also see on the other side, the impulsiveness was a big one. Like, I remember playing this game with someone and accidentally, you know, punching a girl in the face and giving her a blood nose. And it was a total joke and I didn't mean to do it. And everyone just looked at me like, why did you do that? And you know, there's all these things that I couldn't understand. So I could see very early on that, you know, reflecting back, is I was really, really good at some things, and then I was really not good at some things. And my journey, I guess, peaked in about when I turned about 38. I'd created a strategy system for branding. I knew it was brilliant. I knew it was creating game-changing results for clients. I was incredibly confident with that at that point. And I remember a CEO of this organization I was working with said, how does a person like you that can create that, create that? And what he meant was, how can you create a brand strategy that's so breathtaking over there, but also create a life that's a mess like it is?
Yes.
And I guess that was a big question that drove the project, was why? Why can I do that? Why do I show so much brilliance over there and so much ability to blow up my existence in other categories?
Oh, I love it. I think, and what I would just butt in and say there, and what I see a lot of neurodiverse thinkers, you know, we're like 4x speed on some parts of life. Like, we can do things four times as fast as an average neurotypical thinker. But, you know, and so, like, some of us, like, I've seen this in jobs. Someone will do an 8-hour job in 2 hours. They'll get the same results in 2 hours as an 8-hour thinker. And then they'll sit there stressing, worrying, recreating the wheel in those other 6 hours and destroying everything they've created. Because they're bored, because it was too easy. It's kind of like there's no interest, right?
Well, you know, it's interesting. When about the age of around 38, 40, I started my own branding agency, and that's when I got into creating a strategy system. And once I cracked the system, it was over for me. Like, I was, I've done this now, and I can see in my history I've done that. I remember. And when I did an exam years ago and I got 100% in the exam, which was incredibly impossible in that particular class, and I never tried after.
Yeah.
And I you know, I've had clients often coming up to me going, I've never recognized the brilliance of the strategy you created because you created it so fast and effortlessly. Yeah. And it was only after we started really using it that we can see, wow, that was impressive. But I think now I've got to recognize that that's important to me and really balance the amount of business as usual in comparison to new thinking.
Yes.
Or I just become an unhappy person.
Yeah, and it can be the challenge. It's trying, and I think this is the challenge with neurodiversity, is the balance. It's so tough. And, you know, it's when we're in our zone, like when we're recording a podcast, when I'm doing a strategy session with someone as well, you know, you're in the zone. Hours just disappear. It's fun and exciting. But it's so easy then to flip what you're doing, change direction, lose all of that momentum you've created in your life because you're now slightly bored. and it's now time to start next. And this happens to all of us. Like, it's our brains are just wired to look for something outside of us to fix. You know, that's why so many of us are bad communicators. We're always trying to fix each other and rather than listen.
I think it was interesting. By the time I got diagnosed, I knew, going into the project I did, I wanted to answer some questions. I wanted to create a process where a person could be as brilliant as they chose, not just selectively, not be able to drive themselves. So that was the mission I gave myself. On saying that, the thing that I discovered is our framework of how we understand our mind doesn't actually give us the best leverage point to be able to harness our mind and get the most out of it. So what I did was created a new framework, which is clever. It wasn't that effortless, of course. It took me a long time to work this out. But by the time I got diagnosed with ADHD, the psychiatrist said to me, "You've done a very, very good job of getting your life together." And I said to him, yeah, I've spent 10 years working on a process to be able to essentially harness my mind. And so by the point I got diagnosed, I had a lot of control. But looking at the rest of my life, I didn't. And so I kind of felt like by the time I got diagnosed, I'd climbed Everest. And then with the use of medication, it's literally like I can do it with limbs rather than the impediment, So I feel very, very fortunate. And I feel very excited to have created a process for neurodiversity as well.
And I think that's, that's the key, right? What I see a lot of entrepreneurs, creators, intrapreneurs that are neurodiverse, the thing, they're always looking for solving their own problems. They're looking to solve their own issues, right? And it's kind of like if you're not diagnosed, you're kind of looking around this challenge that's already people know about, but you've not really connected with. So we kind of go the long way around to solve it, which can sometimes be a great journey, right? Like you actually learn a lot more because you're not seeing this thing that's not very well explained in reality.
Yeah, I don't think there was any other way to do it, definitely. I do think while I was in it, it was pretty painful. But I also do think that, because I can see a lot of people getting diagnosed later, what I know about the mind is that by the time we often try and develop it, it's very much set up. And so my mind was set up to compensate for something I didn't even know I had. And so there was a lot of work that I had to do, and I call it reconditioning the emotions that I'd interpreted incorrectly. And there was a lot of work I needed to do to kind of realign how I thought with how I now thought. And the process I've created gave me the ability to do that. I think I would have missed out on a great opportunity to move into who I am today if I hadn't been able to tidy up the past.
Yeah, and that's a big thing. Like I call them old solutions, where your brain has just found solutions. They're more the challenge, and we'll probably get onto this around the project as well, is around there are so many. Our brains are so focused on trying to keep us safe and going right that they pick the wrong things. But because it's been built in over so many years to try and solve problems, it's challenging, right? And like what I was thinking, I don't know if you're open to share this, and I'll start. But like before I understood, dyslexia or ADHD, the neurodiversity side of life, I'll be honest, like I used alcohol to stimulate. I was a smoker for a period. I was always looking for some type of escape from the chaos because there's no magic, right?
Well, I mean, if I look at my life, I've always been an addict. So for a number of years, it was sucking my thumb on. And then, as I grow older, it was smoking and then alcohol and, addicted to people, But it was really interesting. I took alcohol away 4 years ago and I could only feel my ADHD after I took it away. So, and it felt like my bones were grating. So I was saturated and I was so stimulated, and there was nothing to soothe it. And that's what alcohol had done for me for a long time, as it had been a constant balm to just everything being overstimulated. And so when I took that away, you know, of course, taking alcohol away is a fantastic because it was so detrimental to my life. But it felt awful, not so much that I missed it socially, or I missed it, you know, or I craved it or anything. It's just literally I felt so uncomfortable in my own skin because I no longer had that soother.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Like, it's honestly, it's the grating is a great example because it really feels like that. Like, we've built up all of these tools to keep us, you know, not having to look at it or deal with it, and trying to decide which ones to use that are healthy versus unhealthy. Mm-hmm. And to realize as well, like, I went through years of just thinking addiction is a separate thing, rather than realizing it is actually, in my opinion, the addiction I had was an outcome of the way my neurodiverse brain was working and looking for an escape. It wasn't, you are just an addict, you can't change. You just have to understand what's the underlying cause set, right?
Well, and that's interesting that you say that, because my strategy to not look at alcohol or not look at my addictions for a long time was to surround myself with people that had worse than I did.
It's a great solution.
Thank you. I'm pretty impressed. Well, I am a strategist. And I actually owned a bar for 7 years, so I was very good at that strategy. But I think what always blows my mind is after not being able to look at something for so long and then discovering a way to look at it, it was so immediate and easy to leave it behind. I've never kind of been in those moments where I had to talk myself out of whatever. It was just, I realized what it was. I could see what was happening. And this is before I was diagnosed, and I just made it a black and white rule. And so as soon as I gave myself that black and white rule that this is the way it was going to be, and I was like, all these years, and I remember people thinking, oh, she'll never be able to do this. And then they were like, what the heck?
It's either side of the bell curve. We're one side or the other. And, like, you know, you're either like an alcoholic or you're sober. You know, it's very like, over the years, I've tried to do the slightly drinking. Doesn't work. And, like, yeah, I went sober at the end of last year again. Yeah. And the same with smoking. Like, I was off smoking for years, and then I decided to have one puff at a friend's wedding.
Right.
It got me back on for 5 years. And then I've been off for the last four and different, you know. And I know I just can't touch it again. It just doesn't
work. I do the same thing with sugar.
That's a common.
You know, one of the things that I think people kind of don't zone in on enough is when you have an addiction, or when you have an issue like, you know, ADHD is due with boredom, for example, our thinking that fuels it isn't I'm bored. It is a reason that navigates us to that. It's a reason we can do it, right? Our thinking is, so for example, you know, my whole life was infiltrated with thoughts that rationalized why I could drink. And it was important. And, you know, I'd made these massive storylines. And so when I could see what they were and understand them, they were a heck of a lot easier to be able to overcome. And same with, you know, I look at boredom, which is a massive driver, like, you know, things boring and I'm miserable, you know, but going into something more exciting often was me creating an issue or some chaos. And then that would move me away from the boredom and into it. And I think that it's really hard to give up addiction or anything like that if we don't understand what it sounds like in our mind.
I 100% agree. And the other phrase that gets used a lot is self-sabotage. And I did a lot of work on that because, again, self-sabotage is exactly that for ADHD, right? We are literally bored as hell. And the best thing we can do is put a bomb under something, blow it up, and that makes it interesting, right? We always think it's a bad thing, but actually our brain's doing it because it's bored.
You know, I've got a really interesting relationship with success, and it's a bit of a dangerous emotion in my mind for various reasons. And so I can see on success, my mind works to sabotage. So it's not just boredom. I can remember many years ago standing on this kind of moment in time where I'd nailed the strategy system. I would launch this global black brand for a client. Like, I was at the top of my game, and I can see what I did after, and I can see how much I blew things up. But it was success that triggered me to move into that. So, you know, it's interesting to be able to review it. But I had every ability, and I guess that was what that client was saying to me years ago, as I had every ability to be brilliant, but I had every single, I had the balance of the opposite as well. It was absolutely equal, and it confused me, and it confused others.
Well,
yeah,
it feels like you've had a 100 different lives, right? You know, you talk about being a bar owner, you talk about all this, like, and I'm the same. Like, we were joking before that that someone met someone that knew me, and it was someone I'd run for parliament with like 15 years ago. And the reason I ran for parliament started because the council wouldn't put a mirror on a blind corner. And someone said, well, why don't you just run for parliament and get a change? I said, well, bugger you, I will do it. And so that started a whole chain of my life that wouldn't have happened for one phrase. And that's kind of how, you know, it's crazy, right, when you think about it.
Well, I think it's the hyperfixation as well, like, and also the ability to problem solve. So one of the things I've had to, you know, I've spent the last year looking at what my business model is going to look like for the next, let's say, 10 years. And that was because I can do anything. So I can get very, very distracted, you know. So having a bar was the 7 year. The bar actually was my laboratory, to be honest. So it was the place I created Genius Hue, which was absolutely necessary for the journey. But yeah, to have had so many different parts of our lives is exciting.
We've made it this far. That's always awesome.
Wow. You expect it.
And so leading on to the project, so, you know, how we met was around Genius U, which is the name of it. And you've been, you know, it's kind of like, you know, tell me if I'm right here. It was kind of your self journey initially to work out how to understand your mind and get past these kind of roadblocks that you keep running into, and kind of then going, okay, how can I solve this for me? But then how can I turn this into a program or a way of thinking that could help others? Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think one of the principles that I took into having a branding agency was, if I saw a common problem in the organization, so say the same problem came from two different clients, I would assume that it was because of us somehow. And I would deep dive into what the problem was, and I would find a solution to it. And that was something that drove our business becoming what it did in such a short time frame. When I needed to have a look at myself, I'd realized that I'd done that with a business, but not myself. And so what I decided to do was I decided to lead with what I knew, which was branding and discovery and distilling of invisible things and organizing them into tools, etc., and start applying it to people and begin my own self-investigation, knowing that it would be enriching however the outcome would be. And look, it sounds a lot cleaner than what it was, because it was messy. I lost a business, and that was devastating. In a very short period of time, I'd kind of blown up three big relationships in my life. I was making a mess. And so I did go, ooh, I need to do something about this. And then the first thing I started doing was, well, I can do branding. I can do it in the way I can do it. And it means that if I start applying it to individuals, can I use that as a catalyst to develop something that's going to help a lot of people?
And it's always messy, right? Like, and that's the challenge. Like, our lives, you know, the biggest change in anyone who's listening's life will have come at those aha inflection points, whatever we call them, where we finally feel pain that we can't control. And it's kind of like, you know, I think it's for humans in general, right? It's kind of that reset point where they know that something needs to go different, right?
think I can see it with people coming into Genius U. They don't generally come in when they're, you know, there's an impetus that's driving them to do something different. And for me, that was a lot of loss, and a lot of loss that I could see I was at the center of. And so I decided to apply my methodology to individuals rather than people. And very, very quickly, I could see that everybody seemed to be trapped in a very, very limited way of operating. And so that's when I started getting into the mind, and I'm going, well, why is it doing this? And so that's when I started deep diving on topics that I never thought I would go near. You know, they weren't meant to be my areas, but I reckon I've got a mind. Minds are very clever. And when we learn how to use them in a particular way, I've got the right to do this, and I'm going to figure out how it works. So I applied the way that I think to the way I did it, which was every step of the way, I tried to work out how a piece of the mind could be used in a brilliant way rather than just at a default setting. So, you know, we've got this incredible ability to self-observe. Have we ever learned how to use it? And so that's one of the tools of Genius U, is self-observing with a framework that, yeah, that. And so that every step of the way, I reached another point that made a person or myself stuck. And then I deep dived on that topic and went, how should it be used in a genius way rather than just at a default way?
That's brilliant. And if you're talking to the, you know, with the audience here, you know, yeah, with listeners in neurodiverse from across the world, they're, you know, heavily dyslexic. Many will have ADHD and a few other fun and exciting undiagnosed benefits of life. Yeah. You know, if you were giving them, say, 3 or 4, you know, points that you've learnt over the years with your framework, you know, what are the things that, you know, that really stand out to you that could help them, do you think?
I think that understanding the systems of the mind is such an exciting proposition for people, especially people with neurodiversity, because we're trying to fit into a society that's been built for a typical rather than people on the either side of the bell curve. So when I first started working, I thought that all my character flaws and impediments were about me. What I recognized is the more I discovered how the mind worked, the more I realized they were about my lack of knowledge of the mind. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I discovered is if you truly want to be good at your mind, you have to learn how to study your own mind. It's not just a matter of studying content. You can't just put content over, the mind's set up to keep us away from anything that's a threat. It wants to keep us safe. So learning the ability to investigate yourself and learning how to understand that is so important.
Being able to create that third person in your own mind, I do it when I meditate a lot. I try and see, you know, realizing your brain is actually a tool like your heart or your lungs, right?
I actually compare it a lot to our ankle. The brain so much, but more my area is the mind. Okay, because, you know, I'm not claiming to know and understand the brain, because, and I look at it as the mind as the general, you know, and instructor. So I see the mind as a function. It's a massive part of us that we often confuse as our whole self. And what it does is it creates our life. And it uses our thinking and our behavior and our core concepts to be able to do that. And every single part of it is very functional. And so what I've done is systemized it so you can be a person that is able to investigate it. And so instead of it being this big intangible kind of mess that we'll never understand, it has everybody's got the same systems. They're all working in the same way. And so one of the things that did blow me away is the more I got to know the mind is the importance of emotions. It's interesting because it was nearly the last topic that I really focused on before I got to a point where I was really happy with the program. And emotions drive everything. They are the electrical source that makes everything go. They're our first things we're interpreting. You know, we have a whole heap of emotions that we use to take us away from other, you know, they are so important to us. And so one of the things I look at the moment is there's a spectrum of how we can use emotions. And so if I look at my parents' generation, they used emotions by denying them and hiding them and not being able to feel them. And then I look at my generation, I'd say we're very much in the expressing stage. Well, I've worked out that there's another level, and that's the use. And so when you're able to use emotions at a genius level, at a use level, it blows my mind how amazing they are. And it's like, it's not like there's good and bad ones and positive and negatives. They all have a function. They're all brilliant for a certain reason, but we cannot learn how to use them if we don't understand the systems, because some emotions are doing defense, some emotions are core, you know, they've got there's different functionalities about them. So emotions are king. And so I think that my two pieces of advice are, one, you have to create a methodology to understand your own mind. Mm. And you've got the right to it, and you've got the ability to comprehend it. And there's a difference between imagining you do and actually knowing you do. There's a certainty with knowing and comprehension. The other thing is, emotions are freaking amazing. And so in general, as a society, we're not understanding how brilliant emotions are. What we're in the groove of kind of getting to know them. But what I've worked out is there's a whole different way that they can be used, and it game changes our trajectory when we learn how to use them as functional tools rather than as things to avoid or run towards.
And that's really key. We talk a lot about, I talk a lot about visualization to use emotions in a similar way. Like, if you can use your visual pictures in your head to elicit emotions going down the right track, 100% it's game changing. And I think also what I see a lot with right brain neurodiverse thinkers is because our brains are a lot quicker than your average, the ability to tell what emotion is connected to what thought is really tough sometimes. Like, we're like that cat that gets sprayed by the water bottle but doesn't know why he's getting sprayed by the water bottle. Like, the cause and effect chain for especially the dyslexic mind, it doesn't exist in the same way. So it's there's some good research on it as well, how it just doesn't play ball.
I think one of the things I've done is developed a process to track it. And so what that means is that you can actually separate and be able to see and be able to kind of investigate things separately. So when I teach people the process, I teach it to them in like six stages. And so what they're learning how to do is they're learning which thought works with which emotion and why it does that and how. And it's like turning yourself into your own scientist. So you can get to the emotions. And I think that the way I look at neurodiversity is that every human is running their lives based on an interpretation of a whole bunch of emotions that they've been doing for a long, long time. The thing, and most humans are created in an environment where society suits them, you know, the way the constructs suit them. With neurodiversity, it's like we've got the same glossary, but it's all in caps and bold, or it's all in, you know, it's just got a different frequency to it. And what that means is emotions are more intense, and emotions, so that they've got the ability to be used even in more in a bad state than a positive state. So for example, with ADHD, I have an extreme dislike. Because when I feel passion for something, it's so extreme. But when I feel rejected or, you know, misunderstood or whatever, again, it's so extreme. And I never knew that was just the lens of how my emotions worked. I thought it was because that person didn't like me, or that was what was happening there, or what, you know. And so being able to actually understand that is
you know, like, I'm honestly with you here. And I think the thing for anyone listening to remember, you know, whatever framework you install, Genius You or others, you know, there's a real challenge we have of hearing stuff and thinking we know. And if I was to say the biggest problem I learned to overcome was the thinking I knew everything. I'd be that guy maybe 10 years ago going, I know, because I've heard it once before, I know. But it wasn't built into me as in my identity. And when it's not built into your identity, which is hard sometimes for us to really do something long enough or in a process that sticks, you're not able to actually use it in your day-to-day life as a tool or a constraint or a framework. You know, so investing your time in those frameworks to actually install them like a proper program rather than install it 70% and leave it. Do you know what I mean?
I think if you look at how we use, you know, self-help books, for example, you know, we all glean wisdom from anything. You know, there's brilliance everywhere. The issue is that that our mind is set up to keep us away from the very things that help is trying to teach us. And so what we do is we go, hey, this is a great book, and we read this book, and then we get to the point where we have to implement something, and then our mind is triggered to actually move us away from it. It's like, I call it like running the gauntlet, you know? And I think that one of the things that I had to achieve in creating this process is a way around that. And so that's why the program allows people to track their thinking and behaviors, and, you know, so they can see it all instead of it just being what I mean people are just like, what I think is everything, instead of being able to go, well, actually what I think there, the reason I thought that was to take me away from the emotion of vulnerability or to take me away from the emotion of uncertainty. I have choice over whether I really want to experience that emotion or not, and I can handle it because I have a process to handle it. And so it was interesting, just like there's so much good stuff out there that's going to teach us how to use our mind better. But the first thing we've got to do is prep our mind to take it in. And so my mind was like yours, where I thought I knew everything. And that's, you know, I didn't mean to be rude. But as a strategist, you have to be confident in your thoughts, but you haven't necessarily been able to work out how to discern them, which ones you have the right to be confident with and which ones you don't. And so learning how to learn was fantastic for me, and I'm always working with coaches now to be able to teach me the next thing, because all I know are two things. I know how to do Genius You, and I know how to do branding. That's the things I'm an expert at. In anything else, I'm going to find an expert to teach me that. And there's one beautiful thing I say all the time in Genius You: if someone else in the world can do it, you can. You've just got to train your equipment, your mind, to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And learning from other people is obviously so essential, but you've got to prep your mind to be able to learn from them.
No, brilliant. 100% agree. And I think, you know, for anyone listening, whatever you do, just think about, you know, realize, catch yourself saying, I know. You know, it's so common. And I just see it in neurodiversity all the time. And all it is a barrier to actually going further. And, you know, if you can get past that and go and start catching yourself and becoming aware of it, you'll start to notice how much you're missing out on and how fixed your mind is. It's massive. No, things. Yeah. Sorry, go for it.
A woman saying to me, I was trying to learn something about SEO, and she said to me, you know, why do you think you need to be the expert at this? And she said, really, you're just like a newbie coming into a territory you don't understand yet. The difference is you're walking in at 48 or 47 or whatever you may be, thinking that you know something. And that's totally, and I was like, woohoo, yeah, you got me there. And so it's been very humbling and very, very beneficial for me to go, I can learn from anyone. And it so excites me, that possibility, because you allow other people's brilliance to, you get to borrow it.
Well, if you look at the dyslexics, the neurodiverse ones that are brilliant, is the one thing they learned was how to let other people be other people and do their stuff. Like, you look at Branson, you know, what he was great at was not knowing everything, but having the energy to inspire others' brilliance. That's the game changer. And too many of us, I think, have grown up feeling like we're not good enough. We've been pushed down. We've created these stories around it. Mm-hmm. And like, they just come through your life forever if you don't change, if you don't work out how to change it, right?
I like being really vulnerable now. And, you know, that every year I've kind of got a couple of things that I'm really working to become very good at. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I did it with financials. And I'm not saying I'm any financial guru. I'm not at all. But I got to the point where I now feel under control of that topic. And it's so fascinating to see an intelligent person, you know, that took that long because I had systems that didn't let me look at it properly. And then being able to actually learn it and being able to, it's as basic as spending less than you earn. it's not rocket science. But the thing is that my systems wouldn't let me look. They wouldn't let me see. And so ripping all that back and being able to be, you know, recognize this wasn't an area I was good at yet and pushing myself to learn, etc. I now find it so exciting. I'm always looking for, I wonder what the next one will be.
Oh, that's brilliant. Thank you so much for being on the podcast today. Is there, you know, for the listeners, is there anything you'd like them, from your perspective on your diversity, you'd like to share with them or let them finish with?
You know, I said to this guy recently, you know, When I take a person through the program, whether they're neurodiverse or neurotypical, I can actually see their neurology through the questions that I ask and the process I go through. And one of the things that, you know, I say to a person that has got ADHD, for example, or dyslexia, is never stop learning about it. It's vital that you become as expert in this topic as you can possibly be. And when you're there, you know, then you've learned, and there's always the next thing to learn, but never stop. Because it creates more and more advantage for you being able to use your mind in a spectacular way. And I actually feel like that now. I feel like even though I look at how much having ADHD without knowing has been detrimental to me, I'd never give this away now. It's such a power, and I'll never stop learning about it.
Brilliant. What I heard was telling everyone to keep listening to this podcast.
That's
what I heard. I don't know. It's interesting how the brain changes.
Yeah, totally.
No, I love it. No, thank you so much. And everybody, I'm going to pop links to Genius U in the notes. So please click on it, have a look. GeniusU.co.nz, does it sound correct?
Yeah,
over in beautiful New Zealand. And you can find out more about what Simone's doing and how she's helping the world. So thank you for being on. And everybody who's listening, have an epic rest of your day.
Thank you.